Okay, this is Johnny Moore. I'm sitting here in London.
Hi, I'm Robert Patterson. I'm sitting in the Queen Street Commons in downtown Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada.
And I'm Chris Corrigan, and I'm sitting on an island on the other side of Canada, Bowen Island, which is a couple of miles from Vancouver.
And we're here today to talk about unconferencing, prompted in part by an article Doc Searles wrote recently, expressing some of his frustrations with the standard fare he puts up with at conferences. And I know that, Chris, this is a discussion we've had. I think unconferencing is something you've written about quite a lot, and you have quite a few thoughts about how we can make conferences more interesting in the future.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny and I have talked around the notions of changing around conferencing, and a lot of the frustration that actually I've read on the net about conferencing is the fact that in the world of blogging, for example, which runs on social networks and on people talking and communicating and feeding off of one another, when bloggers get together in conferences, all of that stops for some reason. And they continue to blog. And in fact, they may be interacting more with people who are outside the conference than they actually are interacting with people that are in the conference. But how do we actually work with what we've got in terms of the existing conference model and turn it into something that's more dynamic? And then one of the ideas we've been playing around with is this idea of keynote facilitation. So instead of a keynote presentation, you actually have a keynote presenter, a keynote person that facilitates dialogue amongst the people in the room. And, just the whole notion of thinking about a keynote presenter as a facilitator changes everything in my mind. You can marry it up with bits and pieces of technology. You can create electronic bulletin boards or real-life bulletin boards within the room and get people actually into conversation around questions that matter, and creating living social networks in conference rooms that mimic what happens on the blogosphere and I think meets people's hunger for that kind of interaction and conversation.
I'd like to, Rob, add a couple of things. I was at a conference not long ago with a very good friend and colleague of mine who would rather die, cut off her right arm, and speak in public anyway, so she was a keynote speaker. So we reinvented her piece. She spoke for about 5 or 6 minutes, then showed some video clips of people that were affected by what we were talking about, speaking about their experience. And then the two of us facilitated a really lively conversation between the participants. And we ran nearly 45 minutes over because we couldn't shut people up. There was so much wisdom in the room. That was one of the things that came out. So, one person would have a problem, another person in the room had experienced the same kind of problem, would have an opinion. So that felt quite different from sitting being presented at. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that 2 years ago in Prince Edward Island, we had a conference called Zap Your PRAM, and everybody was a presenter. Everybody had content, and everybody was heard. And that worked very well as well. And I'm going to make a claim here. Podcasting started as a result of that. Dave Weiner was actually at another conference on the island, which was, talking heads, and bored with that, was enticed up to our place, where he met the executive director of the Trent University Radio, and they had a massive conversation throughout the weekend about bandwidth and how would community radio get a voice around the world. And Dave left committed to do something about it. Now, I'm not sure whether he would say that, podcasting is the direct result, but we're claiming it anyway.
No, but this is the point, though, Rob, is that conferences offer these amazing opportunities.
Yes.
To link people who are in the room. And, we rarely discover that kind of interaction except randomly and through coffee breaks. And and that's a shame, because so much, I think, goes wanting in terms of potential, especially in large gatherings. And there's no reason for it. We've got all the tools we need to be able to connect people. Susan Needon and I were the other day thinking about how would somebody in a conference room of 250 people find the other person there who was interested in the same issue as they were. And Susan has a piece of software that she's been developing, and some online tools that she's been developing to support what we're sort of describing as learning journeys in conferences. So in other words, she sets up a learning journey for people in conferences and calls it a quest.
Yes.
And, you're out there, you've got 3 or 4 days here, what is the holy grail you're searching for? How are you going to come to that? And to really bring people's awareness to the fact that, this could be a bit of a quest for them. The other day we were talking about how, I don't know how it is where you are, Johnny, but in a lot of conferences, especially where there's government people in Canada, everybody seems to be on their Blackberries all the time. And this is, for one reason. I mean, for one thing, conferences are so boring that people just jump on their Blackberries and do all their email. We thought, well, is there a way? What if we could use Blackberries for people to communicate, maybe on a virtual bulletin board, and to be post instead of emailing their doing their work, but to be posting on a virtual bulletin board to say, look, I'm sitting over here, I'm at table 15, I've got this particular issue, and if you want to, you know, if you're working on the same thing, you know, we need to get together at some point, and just that. Right, just having a virtual space somewhere where people can connect to invent things like podcasting, and to give a little bit more. But it's about giving more intention. You know, I'm the last person to say that we should get rid of the chaos that creates those kinds of things. But it's to actually give more intention around that chaos, so that it can, you know, you leave there with your Holy Grail after 4 days. That's really what a good conference is supposed to do.
Yeah, I have heard of, and I can't for now remember the name of it, but if I do, I'll put a link in the show notes to this. I've certainly heard of a technology being developed where each delegate is handed a PDA, which is customized to the conference and is used basically to help people become aware of those who share their interests. And it has neat things built into it, like a presence device that lets you know when one of the people sharing your interest comes within 15 feet of you. It tips you off that they're there. I almost think, well, I wonder if that's one bit technology too much. The technology is clearly there for people to connect their interests. Mm. What I think there needs to be is a kind of a human parallel to that, and a real effort by people who are hosting these conferences to take care of setting it up so that it is very interactive. And I think that means, that means getting away, I think, from the idea of keynote speakers to a large degree. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe what we need are more like keynote listeners who go around tuning into the conversations of other people and aiming to play a human role in matching people up. And I also think we need to design conferences to take care of introverts like me. Mm. Because if I go to a conference where I don't know a lot of people, I will look like I just want to sit and listen, because that's what I as an introvert tend to do when I'm a bit overwhelmed by the number of people in the room. That disguises the fact that I'm actually quite hungry for conversation. And I'm not satisfied by sitting at the back of the room, apparently patiently listening to speakers speak.
You raise a key point for me again, which is actually to go the non-technology route. Mm-hmm. And I think the space that many conferences have, you know, works against people getting connected. Hotels tend to be very corporate. And so I think for me, another aspect of an ideal conference would be a tremendous consideration on designing the social environment. A great deal of planning around creating the right kind of spaces and interactions. I think we have to throw out the hotel environment that were all so predictable and so inimical to relationship building and things like that.
See, this you know, the conversation around tools, including electronic tools, but also these tools of social interaction. To me, I mean, the thing that needs to be turned on its head is conferencing as a teaching model versus conferencing as a learning model.
Yes.
And I think what we failed to do, and what we replicate very well in most conference settings, is a teaching model. So in other words, you have the teacher at the front of the room, and people kind of slip back into grade school. You know, it's like high school all over again. And of course you're going to, well, it's high school with a BlackBerry, so now I get to goof off. So, if you know, just bringing some notion to conference organizers that what we really want to do is create a learning environment for the 300 or 200 or 50 people that are coming to this. And so what are the conditions that we need in order to make this a learning experience for people? And there's all kinds of, you know, and then the technology, whatever technology and tools, whether they're software, hardware, or chairware, you know, whether that all should serve the goal of the conference being to leave people with more questions than they came in the room with. And the beauty of having a wireless zone is that people can immediately begin to Google for the answers to the questions that are raised. They can begin to bring those, and then if we have places in conferences where we can bring that information and bring that thinking together, so that what we're really doing is helping to create a collective pattern of what's happening. I love your idea, Johnny, of keynote listeners. The World Cafe, for example, which is a great process for getting dialogue going in large groups of people, you get conversations happening at tables, and then you get people moving after 20 minutes or half an hour to other tables, and one person will stay behind and host, you know, sort of take care of the conversation that's happened at the one table and initiate people into where it had gone. And but what that does is it both propagates the patterns and the questions through the whole network of what is in the room. And it also, you know, you can also say to the host, you know, be a keynote listener in that sense. And let's begin to assemble the pattern of what we're hearing and seeing as people move around and share ideas with one another.
Yeah, I think I've started to realize when I've had opportunities to speak recently, I've basically tried to subvert myself as a speaker and turn it as much as I can into a facilitation and get the audience to teach me things and to fill in the gaps in my speech. And I always love it when they come up with much more interesting and surprising expressions of ideas than I was going to throw in. Perhaps the most important technology we need to bring to our conferences is silence.
Yes, I was interviewing somebody yesterday on the radio, and one of the most moving answers she gave me was silence. The essence of the interview was about people who came to live on Prince Edward Island and found home here. And my last question to my guest was, well, you know, what has your 30-year commitment to the island meant to you? And there was about a 25-second pause. And then she said, it's meant my life. And what I'm going to try my best with CBC is to get them to hold as much of that pause in the recording that will be broadcast as possible, because the pause says everything.
It's the answer collapses the wave function. The silence is the fullness of possibility, and you know, you've just really encapsulated what a great conference experience should be, whether it's a keynote or an overall experience or just a panel presentation or a small group experience. It's filling one's I think one's awareness with enough stuff that the silence lets it all, you know, lets it all be before we collapse the wave function to begin making sense.
Johnny, tell us and the listeners what happened to you at the conference the other day. I think that's a good story. Johnny? Hello?
Oh, am I here?
Yeah.
There's such deep irony.
I can see that coming a mile away.
The great thing is that was a complete, that silence was a fake silence, because I've just been using the mute button on my microphone so that you don't get too much background noise from me while you guys are talking. So actually I was delivering a very elaborate and rather fast explanation, but clearly what you two were experiencing was complete silence. How this will work in the edit, I don't know.
But, I think you should keep it in.
We'll see what sense we can make of it. I was speaking at a conference, and in brief, what I deliberately set out to do was to go in underprepared, with a couple of ideas to talk about, and with no real rehearsal of what I wanted to say. Basically, to set myself up to run out of words at some point. Which is what happened to me. I asked a rhetorical question some way into my little talk, saying something like, so what does all this mean? In the moment I asked the question, I thought that I knew the answer and that I was going to deliver it, only to find, having asked the question, that I hit a complete blank. And I just didn't know what to say. And I experienced a mild panic. But I guess what I have trained myself to do in those situations is to keep stumm and say nothing rather than burble. So I said silence, and actually what then happened was people from the audience started to answer my rhetorical question, taking it not as a rhetorical question, but as something I was deliberately doing to create dialogue. And out of the responses from the audience came some real gems. So it was a very interesting experience. And then I blogged it. And then there's an irony, in that after I blogged it, I actually heard a recording of the speech that Lloyd Davis, a blogger here in London, made of it. And I could not believe how short the silence actually was, listening to the MP3 of it afterwards, compared to how long it felt to me as I experienced it.
There's also something about not rescuing somebody. Years ago, I was at the most moving thing I've ever been to in a conference, and what happened there was that the whole morning, there were about 50 of us there, the facilitator asked everybody to tell a story about themselves. And then this man got up and started talking about his life as a Green Beret in Vietnam and the terrible things that he'd done. And he broke down completely. And his wife was sitting next to him. And we were all just appalled, not so much about his story, which was devastating, but that, you know, someone would expose themselves so much. And his wife was amazing. She didn't touch him. She didn't say a word. She sat still and waited for him to recover. So the other side of this isn't just so much silence. I long to go to conferences where people are real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love being entertained, but I don't want to sit in front of somebody who's simply being clever. Mm-hmm. I really don't. And there's nothing more powerful than people talking about their own experience. So I would like to see that storytelling, and particularly story from people's own life, being more important in these kind of meetings.
What I love about that story is the sense of spontaneity of that experience, and that the speaker and the audience are together in not quite knowing where this is going.
Absolutely.
In both being vulnerable and nobody being sure what's happening next. And I think part of the move from the teaching model to the learning model that you spoke of, Chris, is having a greater willingness to be in the unknown together.
That's where the learning happens. That's the edge. If we're in the known all the time, there's nowhere to grow. There's nothing to do. Beyond, as you say, Rob, amusement and entertainment. All of those people that are sitting there are real people, and there are real stories there, and there is a tremendous collective intelligence to be put to work for whatever end. At a certain level, it's sort of disrespectful to invite people to come to something that is showcasing, you know, innovation or showcasing creativity or showcasing tremendous opportunities for growth and learning in a field, and then to put them in a standard conference setting and to deny their presence and deny their humanity and deny what they are bringing to offer. You know, unless you're on the panel, you don't get to really get the kind of recognition out there.
There's a financial aspect to this as well, in that I wonder where a lot of the money goes in these conferences. I mean, do they go to the conference organizer? Because, I mean, you know, you pay these very large fees. For what?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no reason to do that. And, in fact, the conferences on the cheap are the ones that that are more profound, because you're not spending all the money on the extras and the bells and the whistles, and it does force you into these kinds of encounters and these kinds of processes that, you know, if you can't afford to pay a keynote speaker, then why not use the group to be the keynote speaker? That would be a novel idea. What if we did that, you know, and suddenly you got yourself some open space, and away you go.
Yeah, I think the problem with conferences as usual is that you have got the hotel margin to cover, you have got the conference organizers' profits to sustain. Mm. And those events are typically marketed, in my experience, in quite sort of an intimidating way, to almost scare you into going for fear that you might miss out on the nuggets of wisdom from the very famous speakers from the very big companies that they've invited. Whereas I think the sort of model that we're craving is one where you dispense with that kind of mystique. You lower the barriers to entry, you make it quite simple, and you treat people more equally.
It could be about a mutual uplift. I mean, if you think about some big industry conference, and I don't pick an industry, the aerospace industry, everybody's there and they're shilling their product and they're talking about, you know, their own innovations and so on and so forth. And the opportunity that's lost for me is that there's an opportunity lost around an uplift for the entire industry or the entire community of practitioners. So to ask the question, what is it that the thousand of us who are here can do to bring us all up, to bring this entire field of enterprise we work on to another level altogether, rather than just sitting here and listening to my latest product announcement or the latest research that our firm has been doing. You start asking questions like that, where you start looking at an industry as a community of people who are, we're all invested in all of us doing better. And the conferences are the one, conferencing opportunities, for example, in the business sector, are one time when, in some ways, competitiveness, can be put aside a little bit, and that exchange of ideas and information can happen in a way that benefits everybody who's there.
That sounds great to me. And I think on that note, this would probably be a good time to bring our little conversation to an end for now. And no doubt we'll be resuming these conversations on our blogs and maybe again over Skype sometime in the near future. But for now, thanks guys very much for taking part.
Have a great Canada Day, Chris.
Yes, happy Canada Day, Rob.